अज्ञानभिरन्धस्याज्ञनाञ्जनाशलाखया चाक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नामश्रेष्ठं मन्मापि सच्चिपुत्रं भाद्रास्वरूपम् रूपं तस्याग्रजामुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठावतीं राधाकुञ्जं गिरिवरां महो राधिकामदावशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतीतकृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वंशाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानं पवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। निखिलाश्रुतिमौलिरत्नमालद्युति निराजितपदपङ्कजन्ता अजिमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितस्त्वं हरिणां संश्रयामि। अनार्पिताचरिं चिरात्करुणयावतीर्णाकलहो समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियाम् हरिपुरतः सुन्दराद्युतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये खन्दरे स्फुरतो वासचिनन्दनः। अज्जानुलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदातो सङ्कीर्तनायकपितरो कमलायतक्षो विश्वम्भरो द्विजावरो युगधर्मपालु वन्दे जगत्प्रियकुरो करुणावतारो लादिनी शक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गसुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमोऽस्तुते। हे कृष्ण करुण सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कान्ता राधा कान्ता नमोऽस्तुते। राधे वृन्दावनादिशे करुणामृतवाहिनी कृपया निजपादब्जा दास्यान्मयं प्रदीयतम्। भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधलक्षाय हितश्चागमादितरङ्गमाध्ये कृपामृत्वं शरणं प्रपानम्। वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दम् वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दम्। ई सचिनंदन गौर हरि की जय। श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय। श्री नवद्वीप धाम परिक्रम की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रमाण हरि। गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल। प्रणाम। ओके सस्टेनेबल गेटिंग लेस सस्टेनेबल। सो We have been sharing about Gaur Tattva, Gadadhar Tattva, Nithai Tattva, Nam Tattva, different tattvas. There are many important tattvas. And tattva means truths or departments of reality, categories of existence, all revolving around what we are doing, trying to do here these days in Navadvip, to be pilgrims, revolving around Sriman Mahaprabhu, Gaur Lila, and we as part of that. So I was thinking that it may be good, again, each one of these that requires its own three lifetime retreat. But touch upon that to continue to have glimpses into something that has no end. So it's always a glimpse and it's always a trailer. You never get the full meal, the full picture, because it's ever expanding. So to share a few words in connection to Mahaprabhu about Guru Tattva, because Mahaprabhu is Krishna appearing as an Acharya, Krishna appearing as Guru. So it's another crucial perspective and facet on the jewel that Sri Chaitanya Dev is. Gaura is God as Guru. And how Mahaprabhu embodies the ideal spirit of a mentor, a teacher, and how we are to learn from that, and how we are to not only look for that, but also embody that for others. It's not just being students, but also being students in the form of extending what we receive from our teachers to other students. At the end of the day, we're all students, but if you're a good student, you become a teacher, like it or not, officially or unofficially. Again, guru is not an official ecclesiastical post assigned by a particular department or agency. It's what happens when you become a transparent, as Prabhupada will say, be a medium for God's presence in your life. And that extends to others by force of that transparency. Whether you are known as a guru or not, that's secondary. So just to begin there, because sometimes we have, again, very narrow-minded ideas or definitions. A guru means someone who is initiating disciples and giving diksha. And that's only guru. And from that, we have all these reductionistic questions when we introduce each other. Who's your guru? And just, I want one name. So by way of presenting the wrong question, we are forcing a wrong answer, because we are reducing the principle of guru to one beautiful, glorious function of it called diksha. But that's not the only thing to say about guru. Again, Mahaprabhu is our guru. Krishna is the original guru. Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself. We cannot discount him from the parampara. Now our parampara Mahaprabhu is there, if you pay attention to how it appears. So let's focus today on that principle, especially after having visited yesterday Srila Siddhar Maharaj's realm. Because he, in many ways, and we didn't have time to talk about that yesterday, there was so much to talk about. But in many ways, Srila Siddhar Maharaj, at least in my opinion, embodies the prototype of what a guru should be all about in terms of affection and shelter and harmony and relief and presence and healthy fatherly figure and so many elements, right? So let's continue reflecting on that. And today we were also visiting the places of different associates of Mahaprabhu, who in one sense they are all gurus, whether they initiated or not, by the way they live their lives. We'll visit the places of Kulavich, Sridhar, Chand Kasi, Murari Gupta. So all of them are gurus. Again, they are not known as gurus, having disciples, but the way they live their lives, we will see. And the word Mahaprabhu related to them, himself as their guru, it all speaks about what Guru Tattva is about. Or just the song we just sang from Narhari Sarkar, how he's expressing beautifully, if Gauranga hadn't come, what will be of our life? We will not be able to continue with this life. And expressing and appreciating the gift that they received from Gauranga, from their guru. Again, Mahaprabhu didn't initiate anyone officially giving diksha. We haven't heard. He's the guru of the whole universe, and he didn't give it diksha to anyone. You figured that out, right? So in this song we just sang again, Narahari Sarkar is expressing deep indebtedness, deep gratitude, deep moving heart for for what he's receiving from Mahaprabhu, whom everyone saw as their guru at that time. As we saw, even the elders like Advaita Acharya or Srivas or Kulavichcha Sridhar, as we'll go today, they were all elders of Mahaprabhu. But for them, he was their guru, their teacher, their everything, not only guru, but their friend, their love, their object of service and affection, and so on and so forth. So again, Mahaprabhu is Krishna, we will say, in his Acharya Lila. Acharya Lila, which we will say officially, more officially, begins when he accepts sannyas, which is outside of Navadvipa. But in one sense, it starts from day one. Not like we say that Yogapit the other day, when Mahaprabhu was born, without orchestrating that consciously, everyone was chanting the names of Krishna. No, he b was born in such a way that lunar eclipse, everyone was outside, Purnim, Gaur Hari Gaur. By his very presence, people felt inclined to chant. That's what the scriptures say, right? The symptom of the greatest of all personalities is that by their breath, Mahaprabhu himself will say, a Kanishta Bhakta is someone who said Krishna once. Krishna, okay, you're welcome. You're in. It's already glorious. No, Kanishta is not a bad word. Oh, he's a Kanishta Bhakta. Wow, you're already in the path of bhakti. That's glorious. Even if it's in the beginner's chapter, you're already on the way. Gaur Hari Bol. A Madhyam is someone who is constantly chanting Krishna, not only once. And then he will say, Anuttam, the highest personality, is he or she by whose very presence everyone starts to chant naturally. So that's Mahaprabhu, right, coming out from the womb. He comes out, everyone says, Hari, Hari, go. And then he will continue making everyone chant by hook or by crook. He will cry, and his crying only will be stopped by everyone chanting Hare Krishna. So he kept everyone chanting. Right. So he was Krishna, his Acharya Lila, in different ways from the very beginning, and more overtly officially when he accepted sannyas and became a teacher of society. And as we said many times, an acharya means someone who teaches by achar, right? Precept, but also walking the talk. By his example, by his the essence of what it's being alive in his or her heart. And as we say many times, Mahaprabhu was very unique in his teaching. Many times he would not speak much. Of course, he will speak much when he was in his Pandit Lila, as we say these days. He will speak too much, according to his associates. They will run away from him. There comes Nimai Pandit. He wants another debate. He wants blah, blah, blah. Grammar, blah, blah, blah. Logic, blah, blah, blah. Let's quickly jump to the Ganges, swim to the other side, and avoid all that stuff. He speaks too much. Yeah, that was his Pandit Lila, which we already explained, was with the purpose of showing knowledge is not the all in all. Braining knowledge, being a genius in intellectual terms, he ultimately leads nowhere in terms of bhakti. So he plays that Lila to then release that Lila. He embraces that fully to the extreme to show, wow, nobody can reach to this level. And now, Gaur Hari Bol, goodbye to that. Now comes the real knowledge. So after speaking too much in his non-acharya lila, because there he was not so much a Vaishnav, he was more like, again, but he will speak too much and try to convert others by logic. And that was like, we don't like that. All the devotees were like, come on, become a Vaishnav. When will you become a Vaishnav? So all the Vaishnav communities pray, may Nimai become a Vaishnav, may Nimai become a Vaishnav. By the blessings of the devotees, God becomes a devotee. So when he becomes a devotee and he starts his prachar, his teaching, he starts to speak less and less. He has lots to say. He's Bhagavan himself, full knowledge is there. But many times his main teaching is by example. As we gave the famous example in his conversion to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, which happened not here, but in Jagannath Puri. Sarvabhauma was the greatest logician on earth, and Mahaprabhu converted him by being in silence for 7 days and listening to him, being present, listening attentively, offering listening, offering presence, empathic regard for the other in silence, not a word for a week. Now, you have to control your, have a controlled tongue, not to want to. I have something to say. I disagree. He basically disagreed with everything he was listening, but he was able to dare bear with that for a week. Imagine, right? Empathically, right? Receiving, understanding, compassionate, listening. Okay. And after 1 week, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was disarmed. Disarmed? Like he's not saying anything, but I cannot say he's not listening. He's listening. He's a pandit. I know he understands what I'm saying, but he's not saying anything. What's going on here? And something is coming from here, from him to me, in silence. That is creating some transformation in me. So all this is happening in silence. And after that week, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is converted. Mahaprabhu says a few words. Vedanta, yeah, like two, three words, checkmate, as we say, and Sarvabhauma then becomes another madman in the legion of Mahaprabhu. That's how Mahaprabhu converted, but mostly in silence. Why? Because his achar, his example, spoke volumes. He didn't need to say too much. But when he says something, it's two words, but coming with that impact from deep realization. So the greatest brains on the planet were captivated by that. So, as we say the other day also, right? That's how Mahaprabhu, even though he didn't officially say, we will begin a movement, I'm starting a religion here. But the movement came out of his movement, out of what's moving him deeply inside. That's achar. That's your inner what do you say? Like the terrain you're putting your seeds, and there's some things blossoming and blooming and growing, your inner cultivation field.
Landscape.
Landscape. So much is being cultivated there, and so many fruits and flowers are growing there. Invisibly, they're inside, but that's a real thing, not only for Mahaprabhu, but hopefully for us. So his movement began from that, an inner cultivation, as we say, him experiencing the heart of Radha Krishna, this unique Leela, experiencing, exploring his own self from Radha's eyes, having so much depth of experience. And that starts to move him to tears, and to move him not only to tears, but to move him to dance, and to move him to sing and to celebrate. Everything starts to move. And in him, and everyone starts to move because of him. So that's how the Mahaprabhu's movement begins, right? With that movement. Yeah, char, deeply internal, moving chords there. And as Maharaj was saying yesterday, we explained this as the sattvic vikars describing tradition, description, like external bodily symptoms of inner ecstasy. No. Cry. Perspiration, stammering, like change of bodily color, and so on. All that is external, it's physical, but it's speaking about something going on internally. So it all begins internally. The movement begins internally, and then the movement starts to begin externally. And then whomever witnesses that external movement connected to an internal movement, they are start to be moved internally, and then they cannot but start to move externally. That's how this movement began. That's how this movement is meant to continue. That's the only way it can continue if we don't want to become an apasampradaya, basically. Yeah. When we stop emphasizing inner movements and the outer movement is not fueled by inner movement, that's no longer a living thing, a living tradition. It becomes a museum piece, a relic of the past, or you name it. A toy from a toy place, a souvenir, whatever. Nostalgic souvenir. Oh, yeah. So that was Mahaprabhu's as a guru, no? Teaching by example. That eventually became Gaudiya Vaishnava movement, beginning with so much movement. And we were moved. I trust that all of you were moved to explore this possibility called Gaudiya Vaishnavism to the point that you became moved, and you really moved physically to come here. You have to move from your countries. Hopefully, there's no clandestine project here that everyone was paid $10,000 to come to the Parikrama, but actually, you didn't want to come. So, Something move is moving, and that's what's moving us here, and hopefully continues to move. As we say yesterday, quoting this Christian line, always preach the gospel and whenever necessary, use words. Right? So the actual preaching, the actually prachar, we use that word, unless again we honor the presence of our whiteboard here. Prachar again means conduct or internal experience. And anacharya comes from someone who has a char. And prachar, right? Little too big, but I have to emphasize the point. So pra means achar means conduct, example, and pra means a very special type of. Like Akhinanda Swami was saying, quoting yesterday, birth from the Bhagavatam, Satam Prasangam Mama Vidya. That this Bhagavatam is talking not about sadhu sangha, but sadhu prasanga. So prasanga means a very special type of sangha. Not just sangha, but prasanga. So praachar, that we translate generally as preaching, actually means a very special pra type of achar. So when you have a good achar, a good example, and good doesn't mean be a good boy, but something very alive is by breathing in your heart, that becomes pracha. That becomes contagious invisibly. So that's how Mahaprabhu mostly act as a guru, basically. He instructed people, he shared words, but mostly was his examples. And that makes Gaur Lila very relatable to all of us also. I will say I will argue many ways more than Krishna Lila in some way. That's why it says so many times Gaur Lila is the entry door to Krishna Lila. Not only the entry door, as we already explained, also its culmination, but the entry door, because everyone is a sadhaka there. No? Sadhaka. It's a practitioner, right? Someone who engages in sadhana is a sadhaka. So even God becomes a sadhaka to become successful in his mission in Gaur Lila. So that speaks about the glory of being a sadhaka. We are all sadhakas. Undeservingly, by the gift of causeless grace, but we are sadhakas. And Mahaprabhu is Krishna trying to be a good sadhaka, he does pretty well. And by being a good sadhaka, he becomes guru. Again, that's what guru means. Guru means you are such a honest, deep practitioner that translates as guru. You become an example to follow for other, an inspiration, a role model, even if you are not looking for this. Even if you are not appointed by anyone, you are guru. Says Ramananda Roy to Mahaprabhu in their beautiful conversation. Whether you are a Brahmin, a sannyasi, a Sudra, it doesn't matter. Hey Krishna Tattva Beta, hey Guru. If you are Krishna Tattva Beat, a seer of the truth about Krishna, you are Guru. Tattva Beat. Beat means a knower, but knower is not just I memorize some verses and now I'm guru. No. Knowing in the most comprehensive way means loving. So if you're a lover of the divine, seriously, whatever you are, that's guru. That translates as guru. So Mahaprabhu is Krishna as a sadhaka, and he is such a good sadhaka that Krishna is Mahaprabhu is Krishna's guru. Again, even he never initiated anyone. But he gave such an example of a practitioner that naturally that becomes something to follow in the footsteps of. If you pay attention to his life, there is we don't have time to go through Mahaprabhu's life and Lila. All those books are available for you to study, Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and so many others. Seven main biographies of Mahaprabhu. But there is a sequence. You know, Mahaprabhu is born. There is a restless child. In Indian imagination, so to say, the biographies of great personalities, generally their childhood is depicted as restless. Like implying the person has lots of creative power, and that's expressing childhood restlessness. So it's like a potential genius, but now it's a mess. But that will translate eventually in something very unique. So Mahaprabhu is not exception to that. Then again, he becomes a genius in his own way, exploring knowledge and playing with knowledge as he wants. Eventually, he becomes a Vaishnava. He shares the message with others, adopts sannyas. He becomes even more officially a teacher. And eventually, he enters Gambhir and becomes a. He starts to cultivate his inner life deeper and deeper and deeper. At one point, he releases all his position, his fame, his commitments as a public figure, and becomes basically a recluse. Now, it doesn't mean that everyone has to do it in that way, but there is some clear, interesting sequence following the cycles of life as well, right? Sometimes you are a public person, you have some social duties, whether you are married or not. He was married, he eventually became a sannyas. In both cases, he has social duties. But with the cycles of life, at one point, we are invited to release all that and enter into a more internal chapter when the cycle is, how to say, winding down. So there is some template there for us to appreciate, not to imitate. Who can imitate Mahaprabhu? But there are some hints in how, as a guru, still is Krishna's guru, still is Krishna teaching what to do. The other day, I read a very interesting quote about the author of, I don't know how you say this book in English, The Little Prince.
Yes.
That's the name in English?
Yes, yeah.
Saint-Exupéry, something. I don't know how to pronounce French.
No, thanks.
Thank you. You have the bona fide pronunciation. Yeah. So, despite famous things that he will say, like the essential things are invisible to the eyes or things like that, there's one nice quote that he mentioned once in relation to Mahaprabhu being a guru. He will say, if you want to build a ship, don't drum up people to collect wood and don't assign them tasks and work. If you want to build a ship. But rather, teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea. I'll read it again. We are coming back to poet to the tavern now. And poetry.
Some drinks.
Morning tavern. There, the night one, the morning one. If you want to build a ship, no? And follow the analogy of the ship. In our tradition, there is the ocean of material existence and the ship crossing the ocean, going to the other side. If you want to build a ship, don't drum up people to collect wood and don't assign them tasks and work, but rather teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea. Positively, in a positive, fascinating way. Everyone will want to be part of that journey. You don't even need to tell them, do that, don't do that. It's like, oh, what to do? Wow. That will be a fascinating. So that was Mahaprabhu's way of being a guru. He embodied that fascinating goal. So everyone was just charmed by that. Even when we will see now with Kolavichcha Sridhar, Mahaprabhu will steal from him products. He will sell banana leaves, and Mahaprabhu will take from him and say, I'll pay you half of the price today because I want to. And Kolavichcha was like, come on. And there was some argument, but at the end, Mahaprabhu always won. But it wasn't like, oh, he was abusing Kolavichcha, stealing from him. But that was not the point. It was that he was so irresistibly attractive that it's like, okay. It's irresistibly. That was Krishna means that irresistibly. The all attractive means irresistibly attractive. Is. Bhaktinandan Swami quoted yesterday also from Srila Bhajaniya Guna Vishishta. His qualities are such that everyone feels drawn to adore him. That's the most coherent definition of the Godhead. He, she, them are so charming that you cannot but be dragged by force to, by fascination, by the force of fascination to give yourself. So that's what Mahaprabhu embodied. So whomever witnessed that, they had a glimpse of the immensity of the sea. Anandam buddhivardhanam, he says in the Sikshastaka. He speaks about the sea, the ocean of Ananda, ever increasing. Mahaprabhu embodied that. So whomever saw him saw this endless prospect, their brightest potential. Again, Guru Śrīla Samarasa will say is your brightest potential appearing in front of you. That's the same thing that Saint Exupery is, sorry for the bad pronunciation, is saying here. No? The Guru is embodying the endless immensity of the sea by example, by achar. No? And everyone feels like magnetized in that direction. Some things may be said in the context of that. Some do's and don'ts even may be required at some stage of the journey, but that will be a very small percentage of the actual teaching. The actual teaching is all said in between the words, in between the lecture, the discourse, how the person lives their life, conducts. That's even the smallest thing. Sometimes we'll hear from many devotees about Prabhupada's life and how he will drink a glass of water or how he... Like do anything, like I said, oh, that was so inspiring to watch that person eating kachoris in the morning. That was so inspiring. It doesn't matter what you do, it's from where that's coming, and you can do anything and everything, that becomes like a charm, right? So again, the similar way, Mahaprabhu, yeah, he'd say a few do's and don'ts, but his main instructing and guruship was revealed through his uncontainable thirst for the divine. I mean, he was the divine, playing in thirst for the divine. So it was a longing so irresistible that became contagious, epidemic. Again, that's how the movement began. That's how the movement is supposed to continue. That's parampara. It's a living wire. Living sometimes becomes interrupted. Our Bhagavad Krishna Gita says that, but that's how it's supposed to happen, right? So again, Mahaprabhu's songs, Mahaprabhu's tears, Mahaprabhu's dancing, Mahaprabhu's relationship with his devotees. It all by witnessing that, everyone else felt compelled to, following the analogy, build the ship. Now, they didn't need to be paid for that, to be, how to say in English? That word is not coming.
Right.
No, yeah, there was another word, but yeah, something like that.
Course.
Yeah, anyhow, that was, there's a very specific word, but it's not coming. Anyhow, that's the point, you get the point. So no pressure, no trying to convert by force, like trying to make you do something that the other is not convinced and not even you are convinced. Mahaprabhu didn't need to convince anyone. You saw him and you realized, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, I don't need to be convinced that he is all about what I'm saying, right? So that's how Mahaprabhu overflowed and converted everyone. Now we are, again, we are a byproduct of that. Don't forget that. Maybe we didn't have the chance to see Mahaprabhu have eye to eye yet. It's coming. But somehow all that he created, that volcanic eruption of divine love, as Srila Samarasa will say, the lava continues to pour, continues to sprinkle, again, in the form of the living current, parampara. We are still being touched by that same original lava. Right, that's why we are here. If not, it wouldn't make any sense. How can I possibly be here today talking about these super high topics? We have been sharing God in an existential crisis, trying to relish the heart of Ra. I mean, blah, blah, blah. Even in your wildest imagination, you cannot think about such a thing. Because imagination means I can only think about the things I have experienced so far. And I let my mind loose to go wherever it was, but still it's in the perimeter of my personal experience. So that's why we need revelation, not to receive some input that goes beyond our wildest imagination and invites us to start to conceive and imagine in a healthy way, wow, such a prospect is there. And another way in which Mahaprabhu, and there's so much more that I like to say today, but let's see where we end. Again, Guru Tattva is a lot, a big ocean. But Mahaprabhu, as he embodied the guru figure, the perfect guru, not only
by showing the classical qualities of a guru, because there are, how to say, expected ingredients in a guru figure, and there these are described in the scripture. Krishna says in the Gita, tat vidhi pranipatinat pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshinaha. Jnaninas tattvadarshinaha. A guru has to be a jnani, means have to have knowledge of the scripture, have to be tattvadarshin, means have to be a seer of the truth. So not only theoretical knowledge, which is expected, but also realization of the knowledge, which means you are a seer of the truth. Or Bhagavatam will say, Brahmani Upasamashrayam. What's the other line? Sabdi Parichanishnatam Brahmani Upasamashrayam. The similar, there are three main verses describing the qualities of the guru, and the three say basically the same. And interestingly, the three begin saying the qualities of the disciple, right? To make the point, it's not just where is the guru? Who is the guru? Well, where are you as a disciple? Because we are not willing to embrace the discipline of a disciple. And discipline doesn't mean, again, some military, unhealthy, toxic sense of discipline, but there is a discipline, as we were talking these days, even yesterday, the discipline of gratitude. That's discipline. If the mind is undisciplined, then you need to bring discipline. And it's beautiful and it's positive, but it's still a conscious daily effort to take your awareness in a certain direction. That takes discipline. So the duties of the disciple are there, but duties of the guru come after, interestingly. And these are the main ones. The Bhagavatam says, Shabde Parichanishnatam. The guru has to be drenched into Shabda, which means has to be so familiar with knowledge of scripture, drenched into the Shabda, into the revealed sound. Another way of saying, expert in scriptural knowledge, to answer questions, remove doubts, etc. Parichanishnatam Brahmani, and also have practical experience of pari, sabde pari. Pari means of the supreme, have personal experience of the supreme, not only knowledge, again, achar. And then he says, Brahmani upasamashrayam. The guru also has to have upasamashrayam, have to have taken shelter in tranquility. That's an interesting way to put it. Upasama means tranquility, ashrayam means shelter. The guru has taken shelter in tranquility, which is a way of saying guru has controlled mind and senses. But also, I will add to that, guru has balanced humanity. Because of course, if you get triggered by unresolved stuff, how much you can say that's controlled mind and senses? Because sometimes we think controlled mind and senses means certain thing, is self sense control. But if sometimes we have unresolved wounds that get triggered, some unrecognized shadow that needs to be embraced as a teacher, then if we do not do that, I wouldn't say we have taken full shelter into tranquility. So that invites for a more nuanced understanding of what's a guru about. Not only spiritually advanced, but in a holistic way, humanly integrated as well, to some degree at least. Fully human, fully divine. That's what we want to be, right? So Mahaprabhu embodied all that. And one way in which he embodied all that, and maybe we will conclude here, is in connection to how he related to his companions, to his associates, to his disciples, we will say again. They were not initiated, but they saw him as a guru. Though many times he was the one seeing them as guru and worshipping them, as we say the other day in Nandanacharya Bhavan, how he treated Nityananda Prabhu, and Mahaprabhu himself fell at his feet, and how much affection, how much love he had for his disciples. We will share many stories today at the place of Chandkasi and Kolevich, Sridhar, Murari Gupta. Again, how Mahaprabhu was a devotee of his devotees. That's the non-differentiation that happens, as we were talking yesterday, the sayujya, the merging of hearts, the devotional sayujya. At one point, you don't know who is the Lord and who is the devotee. There are these beautiful prayers in the life of Mahaprabhu that many times he will offer prayers to his devotees. And those prayers, in other parts of Mahaprabhu's Leela, you will see those prayers being offered by Mahaprabhu's devotees to him. Well, so the same prayers offered by us to the Sweet Absolute, many times Sweet Absolute takes them, owns them, and offers them back. Or probably he starts offering them first, and then that's why we are now trying to offer something back to him. It all begins from the source. So at one point, you don't know who is the Lord and who is the devotee, right? Because that's the self-identification of Bhagavan. I'm a devotee of my devotee. That's what he says all around the scripture. I'm a devotee of my devotee. Bhaktavatsala, I'm very affectionate to my devotee. That's a beautiful definition in Srimad Bhagavatam. Who is Bhagavan? Sukadeva Goswami says, Bhagavan Bhakta Bhakti Mam. Sometimes we have this idea of Bhagavan, which is accurate on some level. Bhagavan is the all-opulent one. He has full renunciation, full knowledge, full beauty, full fame, full this, full everything. So he's the fullest of the fullest, the God, greatest of the greatest, God, Bhagavan. Yes. But a more powerful, intimate definition given in the Bhagavatam, and that's the Bhagavatam take on Bhagavan, is Bhagavan Bhakta Bhakti Mam. Bhagavan is the Bhakta of his Bhaktas. The other definition of Bhagavan, when you play out the implications of it, culminates in Bhagavan Bhakta Bhakti. God becomes a Bhakta of his Bhaktas. Krishna says to Uddhava in the Bhagavatam, Anubrajamyaham nityam pujayeti angri renubihi. Anubrajamyaham nityam. I perpetually follow in the footsteps of my devotees. I walk behind that. I'm following, I'm worshipping their footsteps. Pujayeti puja. I worship pujayeti angri renubihi. I worship the footsteps of my devotees, and I hope, the commentators say, I hope to be bathed by the foot, the dust that is in their feet. I long, Krishna is saying, to bathe myself in the foot dust of my devotees, so I can become purified and somehow be forgiven for the offense of not reciprocating accordingly to how much love they have for me. That what means Bhagavan Bhakta Bhakti Mam. Krishna is the devotee of his devotees. That's Krishna leading the way as guru. A guru teach by example. So one of the examples is to show how to treat each other, how to love each other, how to have proper sadhu sangha. So that's a God we worship, right? That's why it's Krishna, we call it Krishna sometimes. Irresistibly attractive. You cannot resist. How can someone be so grateful, so humble, so loving? God himself publicly confessing around the Bhagavatam, I perpetually walk behind the footsteps of my devotees. I pray to be bathed by their foot dust. So somehow I get purified by the sin of not reciprocating accordingly to how much they love me. What to do? I'm eternally indebted. Again, Gaur-lila means that. That's how Gaur-lila happens. Krishna feeling all this indebtedness, all this gratitude, what to do, how to do. And here we are as a byproduct of that. Gaur Hari Bol. So that's Mahaprabhu leading the way, guided by example as guru, how he's treating his devotees, embodying the ideal definition of sadhu sangha. Rupa Goswami says sadhu sangha has to have three ingredients. One more time to the whiteboard for the nerdy ones. Swajatiya. Swajatiya. Snigdha. Snigdhasyans. Svatavara. We always talked about sadhu sangha here, sadhu sangha there, sadhu sangha ki jai, and yes, ki jai. But what makes the ki jai meaningful is if these three ingredients are there. If not, we may probably shouldn't be saying ki jai. Right? So Rupa Goswami says sadhu sangha, yes, sadhu sangha ki jai. But for sadhu sangha to be sadhu sangha, these three ingredients have to be there. It's like if I say, okay, let's have, I don't know, Let's eat I don't know. Mishti dai. But there are no milk products in the Mishti dai. Like that's not Mishti dai. It's Mishti dahi. Dahi means yogurt. It has to be there. No, there's no, then you have to call it some other name, something else. Right? Let's have khichdi, but without rice, without any grain, no grains. Ungrained khichdi. Another name we have to find. Okay, let's have sadhusanga, but without swajatiya, snigdhasya, swatavara. Sorry, that's not sadhusanga. Probably that's a satsanga. So what? Which are these three? Swajatiya means sadhusanga happens with like-minded people. Swajata, of your own group, of your own type, of your own kind. Like-minded, like-hearted. This has different ways of explaining. It can be people you resonate in the mood. In a higher level, it could be okay, you have an affinity for this particular rasa. You will hang around with people that will nourish that affinity. Different ways of understanding that. But somehow or other, we have to start with the foundation of like-mindedness. We feel we are talking the same language. We want to practice and live our life in this particular way, inspiring and in this particular mood. Each one in their own unique individual way, but there is some consensus in terms of how to do it. And we feel we are speaking the same language, we are on the same page, we are one family, we are tribe, village, swajatiya. That has to be there. If not, you feel in a foreign land speaking to a stranger. And that cannot, you cannot call that sadhusanga. That would be an insult to sadhusanga. And you cannot force yourself to be in sadhusanga when you are feeling there's no belonging here, right? Snigdhasya, which all are an extension of the other. Snigdha means affectionate. So there has to, affectionate has to be the currency. You have to be experiencing there is affection happening. Of course, some other stuff may happen in the way. No? We are not yet in Golok. We are not affection from tip to toe. Still, some things make it, but there's a prevalence, prominence of affection. There is a loving concern for each other, for ourselves. There's affection taking shape in so many expressions in the interactions between devotees. As yesterday, also Bhaktinanda Swami Maharaj was explaining this verse from the Gita 10.9. Bodhayanta, Parashparam, all this is part of loving interaction, enlightening one another. Swatavara, that comes there. Swatavara can be translated as associate with people that are higher than you, more advanced, which of course there is a whole case to make for that. We have nothing. It's very desirable to have elders in our lives. We can take shelter and feel safe there, nourished, inspired. We can trust fully. We can open our hearts more and more, be whomever we are and feel I'm in safe hands here. I'm empowered by being vulnerable, fully open and naked in front of someone who is well-wisher and is pouring so much healing inputs that being reborn over and over again, many times per day in their company, and dying many times per day to be born. But also, you could say Swatavara means we may connect with peers, brothers and sisters who may be on a similar level, but there is so much swajati and snigdhasya, so much like-mindedness and affection, that though we are not so much with two higher elders, we are all more peers, something higher descends through each one of us when we get together by the force of our like-mindedness and affection. So a higher current, let's say, this group, I'm just talking hypothetically, I'm not saying this is a fact. Let's say the whole group are Madhyama Adhikaris. And again, you don't find one group with everyone on the same level, just an example. There's a whole group of Madhyam Bhaktas, but they're all very sincere, like-minded, affectionate. So an Uttam current will descend through those Madhyam Bhaktas, though there's no Uttam Bhagavat in the group. But the spirit of that Uttam, the highest level of devotion, will manifest in the association of Madhyam. You get my point? Okay, so that's sadhusanga, what I just said. These three qualities, like-mindedness, affection, and higher descent happening because of all this. And it has to be experiential. Again, I cannot try to convince you something higher is happening now through all of us. We're like, I want to run away from here, but this guy is telling me this all should happen in a very natural way. Not force, not coerce, not institutionally imposed, not anything of that, but just you find your belonging. Oh, yeah. So Mahaprabhu embodied all this. That's my point. We're talking about Mahaprabhu as an example of guru. So a guru embodies all that in how he treats everyone else, how he relates to his followers, as we'll see today, and we have seen so far, how he relates, how he feels indebted, how he loves them, how he learns from them, how they learn from him. Again, it's always reciprocal. Bodhayanta Parasparam. Verse from the Gita we were explaining yesterday. Chapter 10, verse 9. Devotees get together, Bodhayanta Parasparam, they enlightening one another. It's always reciprocal. It's not just, I'm enlightening all of you, and you are not sending anything back to me. It's just pure enlightenment, unidirectional, sheer enlightenment from one. No, that's not. So now, hopefully, something's coming from me to you, but I'm happy to say something's coming from you to me just by witnessing your faces, even if you are not doing the blah, blah, blah I'm doing now. Right? So again, sadhu sangha ultimately being having such meaningful reciprocal exchanges that ultimately you end up being a guru for one another. Even though there is no official labeling, oh, he's your guru, you are, but something's coming through you to the others, and that's guru tattva descent. A higher current coming. So our sadhu sangha ideally has to be developed, growing in such a way that we end up representing guru to each other at every moment. The principle of revelation, the achar, the type of living experience that becomes inspiring and contagious. That's how Mahaprabhu lived. That's how he expanded that to everyone, and that's how they themselves expanded that to everyone between themselves. That's why you see them and you say, wow, this is it. You see Mahaprabhu when he's associated, this is too much. I remember when the first time I hear this verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu is coming to Puri with his band of brothers and sisters, everyone, madmen, madwoman, increasing divine love. Too much of all this, no, too much like-mindedness, no, affectionate, descending current. They were all overwhelmed, and the king of Puri is looking from the rooftop, like where we are here. Imagine, no, Mahaprabhu and his band are coming from the distance. And the king of Puri is Prataparudra Maharaj. Jagannath Puri, for those who have not been there, is a very multi-religious city. Now, here is more centered on Gaudiya Vaishnavism. In Jagannath Puri, there are many currents. So the king was familiar with variety of spiritual expressions, religious experience. But he's seeing from the distance something going on. And that's like, what's that? A huge cloud of dust coming and people rolling and crying and singing and embracing each other and clinging onto each other's neck. And so he takes some like binocular and he's looking at the distance and he's like, I've seen a lot of variety of religious expressions, but I never seen something like that. So he's asking one of his associates, what's that? Who are them? Who are they? What's that? The reply is Chaitanya Srishti Prem Sankirtan. That's Chaitanya Srishti, means that's the creation of Sri Chaitanya. And it's called Prem Sankirtan. Not just Sankirtan, Prem Sankirtan. We already talked about Sankirtan the other day. Sankirtan entails Samyak Kirtan, Sangha Kirtan, Sambandha Kirtan. How to relate to each other and everyone properly. Properly. But like-mindedness, ultimately we should feel like-mindedness to everything because at the end of the day, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, there is only one family. We have to begin somewhere. We may have to begin with our what we feel is this my tribe. But hopefully by doing that you realize there is only one tribe, Vasudhaiva Kutumbaka. The pity is that most of the people do not know that and leave us there is not only one tribe, but at least we should know that. and all this, snigdasya, affectionate, swatavara, something higher coming always. If you are properly situated, no matter what's in front of you, you will receive a higher descending current. Yesterday we were at Srila Siddha Maharaj's place. Sometimes Srila Siddha Maharaj will read the newspaper to know what's going on in the world. But sometimes devotees were confused, like, he's a devotee, he's an acharya guru, you are supposed to be reading Srimad Bhagavatam, not the newspaper. And Bhaktisundar Govinda Maharaj, his disciple, he told them, when Guru Maharaj reads the newspaper, it's like reading the Bhagavatam. For him, he can draw Bhagavatam from newspaper. When we read the Bhagavatam, this for us, maybe it's like reading newspapers. So what's going on the outside? Oh, he's reading the Bhagavatam. I'm not so sure. Oh, he's reading newspaper. Who knows? So we shouldn't judge by the external. So anyhow, some thoughts about, you know, what's proper sadhu sangha, which at the same time implies what's proper guru, how a guru relates to others, and how all this has been embodied by Mahaprabhu in his personal, radically personal relationships with each person, with each one of his associates, how they fell for him. Like we just sang today in the morning, one of those many who experienced Mahaprabhu as a guru, as a teacher, as a like-minded, like-hearted, affectionate, higher current. Narahari Sarkar, he will say, as we were singing today, if he will have not come, would have been of us, would have been totally dead. I mean, I cannot even think about not having him. They were like mad and desperate in love for him because they felt so much his coming. So that's the kind of experience we all need to have in connection to Guru. Again, Guru is not just one figure. It's a department, it's a principle that descends and expresses through sometimes one main figure, but ideally, eventually through so many, and ideally in Sadhu Sangha. That's invitation, that's the commitment, the responsibility, ultimately, the call. Let's be Guru for one another. Not so much like, I will teach you, I'm your Guru, but just let's Bodhayanta parasparam. Let's interact in a way that is mutually enlightening. Tushyanti chara manti chara, that gives satisfaction, contentment, peace, particular taste, inspiration. That's what happens in the world of love. Whatever thing interaction happens is simultaneously nourishing and enlightening and for everyone in every direction. So here we are training the muscle. A hard muscle to get there. Okay. Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. And let's conclude with a few minutes. We are more relaxed today. Parikram will be in the nearby area. We will be taking lunch here, so we will have time. Let's do a little short triad sharing to bring all down. Just a simple one again. Not particular prompt, but just sharing whatever touched you the most in today's sharing, and why that landed particularly for you in that particular way. So we'll spend a few minutes, maybe 3 minutes each. So we do 10-minute exercise before we go for breakfast. Okay? Let me pause the recording and we will select the groups. Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai. Sri Guru Tattva ki jai. Navadvim Dham Parikram ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanand.